Hi, Dave Emery here, side one of For the Record program number 766, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, part 11, The Destabilization of the NSA and the GCHQ. This program is being recorded on January 5th of the year 2013. As I have said, we're going to be doing an update or another installment of the programs about L'Affaire Snowden, so to speak, every other week because there is so much that's going on and so many points of other, so many other avenues of investigation to be covered. So I'm going to be dealing with Snowden every other week. So in 2 weeks, we will deal with episode 12 of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. Now, before we begin, let me remind you, or for newer listeners, inform you of the SpitfireList.com website. I have my entire life's work up there available for free for download, plus massive amounts of other information. And each For the Record program has an article length, detailed, annotated description featuring the text excerpts that I use on the program, often with information that is not included in the original broadcast due to the limitations of time. So please use the program descriptions and the other information available on the SpitfireList.com website. It is all available for free. Now, to the subject of L'Affaire Snowden, or The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, as I call it. Once again, several points. This is an intelligence operation. Eddie Snowden is a spook. He is not a crusader for civil liberties or a hero of any kind. We're going to go into more of what he actually did. And at one level, this is a psyop. The vast bulk of this information, in terms of what has been made public, note that qualification, in terms of what has been made public, that has been known for years or could be reasonably extrapolated from what has been known. I have been talking about this intermittently for the better part of two decades. I don't obsess on that, but this information has been available, and I have been discussing it for the better part of two decades from open sources. This is not an exercise in self-exaltation, but rather to make the point that this is a psyop. And also note that this really is not, quote, post 9/11. That point has been made, and it is basically erroneous. In that regard, I'm going to read an excerpt of a New York Times article that I've read into the record many times, this by way of making that point. From the New York Times of September 6th of 2001, well over 12 years ago, we find the following from the World Briefing section, Europe, report on U.S. spy system by Suzanne Daly. Again, this was published 5 days before September 11th. It talks about a European Parliament report that followed a year-long investigation. And again, 9/6/2001 is the date. This reads in part, the U.S.-led spying system known as Echelon can monitor virtually every communication in the world by email, phone, or fax that bounces off a satellite, the European Parliament was told. But in reporting on a year-long study of the system that was prompted by concern that American companies were using data from the system to gain a competitive edge, Gerhard Schmidt, a German member of the Parliament, said that, quote, many European countries had similar abilities. That again from 9/6/2001. And then For the Record 765, the program we did before Bob Dylan versus the Ustashi, we pointed out that European intelligence services have been doing just exactly that. They are, of course, shocked to learn that there is gambling going on in this establishment. Now, several other key points. I noted again that French intelligence has been doing this, the BND, German intel, that I suspect is actually the whip hand in this entire thing. More about BND later. The very day that I recorded, for the record, 765, on December 15th of 2013, the New York Times of that day, again, 12/15/2013, carried the following article by Scott Sayari, S-A-Y-A-R-E, called France Broadens Its Surveillance Power. It reads in part, "For all their indignation last summer, after the scope of the U.S. mass data collection began to be made public, the French are hardly innocents in the realm of electronic surveillance. Within days of the report about the National Security Agency's activities, it was revealed that the French intelligence services operated a similar system with similarly minimal oversight." That, by the way, is wrong. There is less, as we will see. "And last week, with little public debate, the French legislature approved a law that critics feared would markedly expand electronic surveillance of French residents and businesses. The provision, quietly passed as part of a routine military spending bill, defines the conditions under which intelligence agencies may gain access to or record telephone conversations, emails, internet activity, personal location data, and other electronic communications. The law provides for no judicial oversight and allows electronic surveillance for a broad range of purposes." Again, no judicial oversight. Okay, that is worth taking note of. Again, the French are shocked, just like the BND and the Germans are shocked. We're going to come back to Angela Merkel. She too was shocked. Everybody is shocked. And then the croupier will hand them their winnings, sir. And again, this is not news. The New York Times article from 9/6/2001 made the point that many countries in Europe were doing the same thing. Now, one of the points that I made in, for the record, 7/58 and in 7/59 is that the political milieu, the political forces that underlie Edward Snowden, and of which he is a part. He's a big Ron Paul backer, wants to get rid of Social Security, wants to bring back the gold standard that John Maynard Keynes referred to as a barbaric relic. The forces of which Eddie Snowden is a part, and the forces for which he is walking point, are the very ultra-right-wing Republican forces that had the government, that precipitated the government shutdown in the fall of 2013 and came fairly close to having the U.S. default on its debt, which would have been absolutely catastrophic from an American and global economic standpoint. I also, in For the Record 762, discussed L'affaire Snowden, or Snowden's ride, as a destabilization effort against President Obama. We're going to talk about that in just a second. It is at one level a destabilization of President Obama's administration. At another level, what we're going to be talking about today, a destabilization of the NSA and GCHQ, the British counterpart to the NSA. And as we will begin to touch on in this podcast, and as we will come back to in a big way in 2 weeks when we do our next installment of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, it is a destabilization of and an attack on American internet companies, and they very well end up doing a lot of economic damage to the U.S. Now, for the record, 758 and 759, I pointed out that the forces that shut down the government in the fall of 2013 are the same forces embodied in Eddie the Friendly Spook. And I have talked about this in, for the record, 762, as a destabilization of Obama's administration. And in opposition to that, a New York Times story of December 16th of 2013, judge questions legality of NSA phone records by Charlie Savage. I'm not going to read the text, but this concerns a ruling by Judge Richard J. Leon, last name L-E-O-N, about whom we will have more to say in a minute, that in fact the NSA program was unconstitutional. And there were all sorts of very righteous pronouncements. Snowden wrote, "I acted on my belief that the NSA's mass surveillance program would not withstand a constitutional challenge and that the American public deserved a chance to see these issues determined by open courts," unquote. Today, a secret program authorized by a secret court was, when exposed to the light of day, found to violate Americans' rights. You know, the Star-Spangled Banner or America the Beautiful should be playing in the background while this BS, frankly, gets downloaded. Well, it all sounds nice. The New York Times intoned in a similar way. And all over on the Internet, in the electronic media, the print media, this was hailed as a great vindication of American democracy, civil liberties, etc. By the way, just on the heels of the 50th anniversary of President Kennedy's assassination, and basically people who are concerned with the Constitution should be aware that basically, for all practical purposes, the Constitution went down the tubes on 11-22-63. But in this article, again, judge questions legality of NSA phone records by Charlie Savage, New York Times, 12-16-2013. There are 2 points upon which we are going to expand. First of all, the case was brought, quoting, "The case was brought by several plaintiffs led by Larry Klayman, K-L-A-Y-M-A-N, a conservative legal activist." Well, he's a whole lot more than that. The ruling was by Judge Richard J. Leon, L-E-O-N as in Nancy, of the District of Columbia. Now, who are these sainted defenders of our civil liberties? The name Larry Klayman may ring a bell, as an article that is excerpted in this talks about. Larry Klayman was the point man for the destabilization of the Clinton administration behind the Whitewater investigation. The Clintons, for younger listeners, had made a bad real estate deal, the Whitewater deal. There was no criminal conduct, but it was blown up, literally, by a huge rhetorical and political phalanx into something that led directly to President Clinton's impeachment. There's a Huffington Post article by Marcus Barron from March 18th of 2010 that talks about Larry Klayman. Larry Klayman, the founder of Judicial Watch, is best known for playing an instrumental role in fueling the Whitewater crisis. And he's more than that. People may have become aware, and people may remember that, again, last fall, when the government was being shut down, that there was a rally at the, in front of the White House. This is a CNN story by Ashley Killo, K-I-L-L-O-U-G-H, and Shannon Travis, T-R-A-D-I-S, and Brian Locus, R-O-K-U-S, as in Sam, from October 13th of 2013. Rallier tells Obama to put the Quran down, and talks about this rally on the White House steps. High-profile speakers with close ties to the Tea Party appeared at the event, including former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin and Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. One speaker went as far as saying that the president was a Muslim and separately urged the crowds of hundreds to initiate a peaceful uprising. Quote, "I call upon all of you to wage a Second Amendment nonviolent revolution, to use civil disobedience, and to demand that this president leave town, to get up, to put the Quran down, to get up off his knees and to figuratively come out of the White House with his hands up, said Larry Klayman of Freedom Watch, a conservative political advocacy group. That's the guy who brought the suit, basically, the fellow who was calling Obama a Muslim and telling him to put down the Quran, come out of the White House with your hands up, etc. And again, the point that I made in For the Record 758 and 759, the shutdown faction of the GOP, really pretty much the whole thing, the Tea Partiers are the forces embodied in Eddie the Friendly Spook. And this guy, Larry Klayman, again, buying in on the whole, you know, Obama, the Marxist, socialist, fundamentalist Muslim from Kenya, is the guy who brought the lawsuit. Again, the forces embodied in Edward Snowden are the same forces that shut down the government and could very well have destroyed the U.S. and world economies had the U.S. been allowed to default on its debt. Now, who is the judge who ruled in this case? It's Judge Richard Leon, L-E-O-N, and Robert Perry of Consortium News of December 9th, 2011, informs us of some of the political pedigree and heritage of Judge Leon. And this will sound very familiar. This will ring very familiar to veteran listeners. Leon was excerpting this article. Leon was appointed to his lifetime judicial post by George W. Bush in 2002 after Leon had earned, unquote, the gratitude of the Bush family by protecting its interests as an aggressive and reliable Republican legal apparatchik on Capitol Hill, skipping down. In the 1990s, Leon served as special counsel to the House Banking Committee as it transformed President Bill Clinton's minor Whitewater real estate deal into a major scandal that eventually led to the House vote to impeach Clinton in 1998 and thus set the stage for Bush's disputed election victory in 2000. However, again, note that Larry Klayman was leading the charge. Judge Leon was handling the legal positioning for that for the Republicans in the destabilization of the Clinton administration. More about Richard Leon's political heritage here. However, Leon's most important work for the Bushes may have come in the 1980s and early 1990s when he helped construct legal justifications for Republican lawbreaking and sought to intimidate Iran-Contra-related witnesses who came forward to expose GOP wrongdoing. In 1987, when Representative Dick Cheney, Republican of Wyoming, was leading the Republican counteroffensive against the Iran-Contra investigation into evidence that President Ronald Reagan and Vice President George H.W. Bush had engaged in a wide-ranging conspiracy involving illegal weapons shipments and money transfers, Leon stepped forward as deputy chief counsel on the Republican side. Leon worked with Cheney not only in fending off accusations of wrongdoing, but in coming up with a counterargument that accused Congress of intruding on foreign policy prerogatives of the president. Skipping down, in 2005, as vice president, Cheney hearkened back to that Iran-Contra minority report in defending George W. Bush's assertion of unlimited presidential powers during wartime. Skipping down. In 1992, when the House Task Force was examining evidence that Reagan and Bush began their secret contacts with Iran in 1980 while trying to unseat Jimmy Carter, Richard Leon was the Republican point man to make sure that nothing too damaging came out. Leon served as Chief Minority Counsel to the House Task Force investigating the so-called October Surprise allegations. In other words, Judge Leon is a loyal, as Robert Perry put it quite accurately, who is a loyal and aggressive Republican legal apparatchik on Capitol Hill. He helped to cover up the Iran-Contra scandal. He helped to cover up the October Surprise, and he also helped to lead the charge into the Whitewater non-scandal, along with Larry Klayman. Again, come out of the White House with your hands up and put down the Quran, as Klayman maintained in that rally. By the way, in that rally, two of the other participants were Ted Cruz, who was involved with George Bush's legal effort in the 2000 election in Florida, and also Sarah Palin. Ted Cruz, by the way, bankrolled in part by Peter Thiel, who also bankrolled Ron Paul's candidacy. Ron Paul was Eddie Snowden's political candidate of choice in 2012. Ron Paul's top legal advisor is Eddie Snowden, the Snowden family's American attorney. Also present at that rally in a high-profile way was Sarah Palin, who, of course, was the 2008 vice presidential candidate. As we looked at in For the Record 652, Sarah Palin is something of a cat's paw for the Alaskan Independence Party, looking to help break up the union by having Alaska succeed. She also, that party, by the way, is a correspondent party of the Aryan Nations. She, of course, was John McCain's vice presidential candidate in 2008. Edward Snowden voted for John McCain in 2008. McCain, by the way, was over in Ukraine schmoozing with the Svoboda group. They recently organized, they are descended from the OUNB, the Ukrainian fascist group that was involved with the 14th Waffen-SS Division, the Einsatzgruppen, and that, by the way, recently organized a rally celebrating Stefan Bandera, the founder of the OUNB. And John McCain, Eddie Snowden's presidential candidate of choice, was schmoozing away with the leader of Svoboda. So again, we have Richard Leon. And by the way, one of the things that's so significant about this is that in 2005, as Perry puts it, as Vice President, Cheney hearkened back to that Iran-Contra Minority Report, parenthetically drafted by Richard Leon, in defending George W. Bush's assertion of unlimited presidential powers during wartime. Part of that was in defense of some of the very same things that Snowden is criticizing. So again, we are looking at one level, a destabilization of the Obama administration by some of the same forces that not only precipitated the government shutdown last fall, the fall of 2013, but that also have been wiping their rear ends with the Constitution on behalf of the Republican Party and the Bush administration and their crimes, Bush administrations, for decades. Richard Leon helped to cover up Iran-Contra, helped to precipitate the Whitewater farce with Larry Klayman, helped to cover up October Surprise, and also wrote a report that Dick Cheney was using to justify some of the same practices that Edward Snowden has been criticizing. The true scope of what Snowden did, and again, one of the points that I have been making before we go into this, is that what Snowden did makes no sense in terms of fighting for civil liberties, free speech, whatever. The very first thing he does, he's not a whistleblower either. A whistleblower would have gone to his or her superiors. He infiltrated the NSA with the goal of doing exactly what he did. He then splits for China right on the eve of President Obama's meeting with President Xi of China. China, not exactly a bastion of internet freedom, civil liberties, and free speech. Then, by the way, that made things more difficult for Obama. Just before Obama goes to Europe, Nazi fellow traveler Glenn Greenwald publishes stories in the Guardian about in the Guardian, I should say, about NSA surveillance in Germany, thereby putting a whammy on U.S. diplomatic relations with Europe. And then Snowden goes from China, one bastion of internet freedom, free speech, and civil liberties. He hightails it over to Russia, also renowned around the world as a bastion of internet freedom, free speech, and civil liberties. That makes no sense in terms of fighting for free speech, human rights, etc. It makes a lot of sense as an intelligence operation directed in part at destabilizing President Obama and the U.S. We're going to continue with that, an article that points to the true scope of what Snowden did. Article from the New York Times of December 14th of 2013. Officials say U.S. may never know the extent of Snowden's leaks, by Mark Mazzetti and Michael S. Schmidt. American intelligence and law enforcement investigators have concluded that they may never know the entirety of what the former National Security Agency contractor Edward J. Snowden extracted from classified government computers before leaving the United States, according to senior government officials. Investigators remain in the dark about the extent of the data breach, partly because the NSA facility in Hawaii, where Mr. Snowden worked, unlike other NSA facilities, was not equipped with up-to-date software that allows the spy agency to monitor which corners of its vast computer landscape its employees are navigating at any given time. 6 months since the investigation began, officials said Mr. Snowden had further covered his tracks by logging into classified systems using the passwords of other security agency employees, as well as by hacking firewalls installed to limit access to certain parts of the system. So again, according to this story, the full scope of what Snowden actually got his hands on may never be known. In that same context, a Washington Post story from December 18th of 2013 by Walter Pincus, P-I-N-C-U-S, Snowden still holding keys to the kingdom, unquote, reads in part, "We've yet to see the full impact of former National Security Agency contractor Edward Snowden's unauthorized downloading of highly classified intelligence documents. Among the roughly 1.7 million documents he walked away with, the vast majority of which have not been made public, are highly sensitive, specific intelligence reports, as well as current and historic requirements the White House has given the agency to guide its collection activities." Skipping down, "If disclosed, the information would reveal vulnerabilities within U.S. intelligence gathering at the strategic level," the official said. Where the copies of these sensitive tasking documents are is an unanswered question. Skipping down, Glenn Greenwald, who said he had spoken to Snowden hours earlier, told the Associated Press that in order to prove his credibility, Snowden, quote, had to take the ones that included very sensitive, detailed blueprints of how the NSA does what they do, unquote. These documents, Greenwald said, would allow somebody who read them to know exactly how the NSA does what it does, which in turn would allow them to evade the surveillance or replicate it. This has nothing to do with civil liberties. This is an aggressive, hostile counterintelligence operation. Again, 1.7 million documents. Snowden could not possibly have read all of those himself. This has no more to do with civil liberties than going to China and Russia. This is a hostile spook operation. However, more about this in Side 2. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 767, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, Part 11, The Destabilization of the NSA and the GCHQ, being recorded on January 5th of the year 2014. Happy New Year. My name's Dave Emery. Ciao.